Morning, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Data Exposed. I've got Sean Bice, Nigel Ellis, Rohan Kumar with me. We've got some exciting stuff to talk about today. Before we get started, gentlemen, why don't you introduce yourself, and then we'll get started.
Hi, my name is Rohan Kumar. I run the engineering for the SQL RDBMS team.
Hi, my name is Nigel Ellis. I run engineering for the SQL Azure team.
Hi, I'm Sean Bice. I run program management for the relational assets of SQL.
Perfect. Gentlemen, it is a pleasure to have you. Welcome. So we've got some exciting news and topics to talk about today. SQL database, we announced some tiers, some new GA tiers last week, correct? Why don't you tell us about those?
Yeah, so the new service tiers that we just released sort of reflects about the last 2 years of work. So we first introduced SQL DB as you know it today in 2009. Mm-hmm. We've been on a long journey to do a whole bunch of stuff that we want to talk about, the behind the scenes look. But the team's really poured a lot of energy into producing what we believe is a really nice set of offers for developers around the world.
Perfect. And so how are developers, so you talked about kind of behind the scenes. So let's talk about what's actually going on behind the scenes and how the developers and people that use Azure SQL Database can leverage what's going on behind the scenes. Who wants to drive that?
Yeah, one of you should talk about a little, maybe the operational hardening and the journey behind that.
Yeah, so Sean mentioned we started this whole focus on a relational database mm-hmm. service in the cloud in 2009. And it's been sort of a really interesting journey for the team. Because for folks out there, the team that's building this is the same team that builds the SQL Server relational database product, right? And that's really an enterprise product, ships as box software, people install it, manage it themselves. So it's been an amazing journey for us to figure out, well, we built the thing, but we're not necessarily good at operating it, right? So how do you learn how to operate it and really start to ship things on this cloud cadence, right?
Right.
People buy into the cloud, they buy into that value chain, then they expect incremental functionality sort of in the order of weeks or months rather than a box product, which is years.
Yeah.
So a lot of what we started to do was to look at, well, you know, there's this philosophy of you get what you measure. So we said, well, if we're going to be great at operating the thing, we have to really start looking at the service through operational metrics. And early last year, we were sort of scratching our head and we said, well, what should we measure, right? And we came up with sort of three pillars that we looked at. We looked at COGS, so what's the cost of the service that we're running?
Yep.
So for each sellable database, how much does it cost us? Is it profitable or not,
right?
How much capacity do we have? Because of course, once people buy into the cloud, you never want to turn them away, right? And then the last one is SLA, right? Is it always there? Can I access it? Am I getting the performance I need and so on? So that sort of opened up this whole interesting journey we've had to create this thing that we call the operational scorecard, where we're looking at things through those three pillar metrics every single day of the week. So for example, for SLA, we look at how available is the database. If somebody tried to access the database, were they able to do that?
Right.
Once they were able to log into the database, were they able to do anything useful with it? Right. It's a little bit different saying I can log in, but can I actually do something with it?
Right.
And that's been this really interesting thing because we built the SQL Azure service on a prior data service that we built internally at Microsoft. That was a product that we called inside. It was known as CloudDB. Mm-hmm. But it was very interesting because we've built that and we focused on it, a dedicated cluster for one app for one tenant. And what we've effectively been doing the last 4 years, we've been evolving that and making it multi-tenant, having differentiated service offerings and so on.
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting because as developers and people that want to use the service, doesn't matter if I can spin up a database, it's can I log in once I access it? Do I get the performance that I want?
Exactly.
Is it actually usable?
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't matter what else I can do. You know, can I actually use it? And can I get the performance I want?
Exactly.
Right? And so from an operational standpoint, you know, a lot of us, you know, as developers and database people, we don't think in terms of that because we understand on-prem.
Yep.
Right, but going to the cloud, there's certain things now that we have to think about, and it's typically we don't think about the operational side.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because I mean, this whole paradigm of the cloud, people really want to just get enough and get this economic return, right?
Yep.
I don't want to over-provision, but I want to know if my application and my resources, I need different tiers.
Yep,
I should be able to upsize, pay more, and get more throughput.
And you made that available without having to really have to think about a whole lot, right? Just what's my new tier? Do I get the performance? And then I can go. I don't have to worry about anything
else. That's really the service tiers that we GA'd last week.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just sort of adding on to what Nigel said in terms of one of the big decisions we made, I think back in 2010, was there was a choice around for SQL Azure. You know, do we keep the same engine code base? The RDBMS engine that powers the Box product, or do we sort of create a new copy of the code? And the decision was, it was very expensive, but we'll have exactly the same engine that powers, right? And when you start thinking along those lines, a big decision was just redoing the way we think about engineering as a whole,
right?
We had, previously we had this notion of, for the Box product, we had several branches that you'd create. So every new feature that got built was built in a different branch. And then there was a process of reverse integration where, you do all the certification, testing, validation for several weeks, if not months, before you added stuff to the mainline. And the amount of time it took to do that was very, very long, And then we were sort of looking at, hey, how do we go from, where we are adding incremental value every 18 months to 2 years to we want to do something every month, right? So that required us to fundamentally rethink the entire engineering process. Stuff that would take several weeks had to be done in a day. How do you make that happen, right? And there was sort of a belief system where the team itself at some point was like, hey, man, are we trying to get too crazy over here? Do we even believe this?
I remember we had discussions
where we would walk in and say, hey, our entire, the functional thing, takes about 3-4 weeks as an example to get it, by the time we started and ended. How could we do that a couple of times a day? Right. So, the answer was like, what are you thinking? Right. This doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But then those are the kind of questions that, the three of us started asking of the team, saying, hey, how do you challenge yourself to start thinking of that? And a big decision over there was, we're not going to have multiple branches. All the 400 engineers of the team are going to write the code in a single branch. Now, if you think about it, it sort of goes completely against everything you think about in terms of isolation, stability, and merge and create a single mainline. And everyone's like, man, we'll have build breaks all the time because so many people are checking in. And the reality is that was a very pivotal decision, which we believe has helped us ship a much faster Box product because there was a lot more focus that was coming on the cloud. SQL 14, which we shipped last year. One of the reasons it sort of became very efficient, we had far fewer engineers working on it, was because we were in a single mainline. There was a lot of efficiencies around just the engineering system, the way we checked in code, the way we actually validated. Things that would happen on once a month, once every couple of months started happening, now happen multiple times a day.
Yeah.
If you think about the efficiency gained over there, it's actually phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the team itself, when they look back at the journey, it's been pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing. So kind of a paradigm shift, but a good shift, and allow you to quicker releases, more efficient releases.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting too, because the prevailing wisdom is test. You sign off on all your tests and you release it.
Yeah.
But to the viewers out there that are working on services, they know that all the testing in the world, you find issues in production,
right?
So there's this philosophy of testing versus tasting, right? Can I push it out there? Does it taste good? And if so, can I do it? Do I then sort of roll it around worldwide? And this really necessitated us to say, look, the magic here is velocity. If you can move code quickly into production, you can hide a lot of different sins and problems and so on because you can quickly remediate, right?
Yeah.
So we've put a tremendous amount of focus in essentially our overall engineering system and how we can push changes quickly and then do it in an automated way.
So you get something out there, and if there's an issue, it allows you to break fix much faster.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Okay, good.
That is super important.
Yeah, well, if you think of, last year was a big year for us in that, I remember when we first started talking about building these service tiers and we had big payloads and you would look at this notion of it could take maybe a month and a half or two to get this payload together and get it deployed around the world. And to Rohan's point, it's like, look, this needs to happen daily, sometimes multiple times in a day. But I think that the team last year was probably the year we turned the corner operationally. In fact, it was last summer. Mm-hmm. Last summer, this is when we got this operational scorecard. And I think there's a lightning rod of clarity when we created this scorecard with the right set of APIs, looking at the right dimensions. It was definitely painful because the first time you show up for that scorecard, most people don't really understand this operational aspect, especially over the last 20 years we've been building Box software.
Right.
But SQL engineers are pretty determined folks. Once we got that operational scorecard, we really, really started to understand the internals of the system. And within 3 months' time, I will never forget October. Rocktober of last year, actually, is what we called it internally. But it was the first time we had nearly 800,000 databases reach the full SLA. In the system, so it was
very nice.
It was for all this pain the team went through once we had that clarity in the summer, then when Rocktober happened, I think people really, engineers each and every day really believe like, hey, this is very, very doable. And then you look at the service tiers that we just announced, we're the first relational data service in the world to have a 4.9 availability SLA. Yeah.
And that's awesome. And I think there's some benefit. When the developers go, I get it. I can see there's a light at the end of the tunnel. All that work, you know, is paying off.
It's a motivation thing, right? One of the things is, if you think about it, as an engineer, you want to see the impact of your code like happen very quickly. I mean, I used to, you know, used to have this discussion in the box product world, hey, a feature got done, and if you sort of got that feature done, like, you know, right after you shipped a major release, you had to wait for 2 years before it made it to the market. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's, it seems like eternity, you know, when you sort of get into the services world. And now, hey, you sort of do something, you take your code to production yourself, you see how the, you know, the custom feedback is. It's a whole different ballgame.
And since that time, you can just see, once you start getting that operational, you can start seeing that, you know, the improvements after that are much better, just because we were able to look into the operational side, say, okay, now we got this, there's the foundation, now we can start making improvements on that, and much faster and much more efficient.
That's right.
That's really nice. So from the operational side, I think it's, you know, now the developers can start thinking about, all right, I have to think about this extra step, but it's not a whole lot, right? It's, I get the 4.9s, right? This is awesome, wonderful. All right, so from the operational side, we've got the new service tiers. What else is there that?
Well, I think that, you know, the service tier journey was pretty interesting. When we first, you know, I remember last year as well. The three of us were, you know, we sit down and we chat every single day. And we all talk to customers, we're talking to engineers, we're talking to first party inside of the company. You know, first party for us is an interesting thing. Why? Because we get to take some of the largest workloads in the world and run it on our platform. And if you're, you know, in the sense of proving a platform out, things like Skype and Bing ads and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, no better place to test it.
No better place to test it. And when things are not working out, no better place to get some immediate
feedback. Yeah. whether you like it or not.
You know, and that's the joy of, I think, what we do for
it's
a
reality,
living.
Yeah.
And it's the reality of it. And you know, you sort of hold the course. But, you know, I remember talking to customers. I remember distinctly the three of us were having coffee one day, and we were chatting about, you know, spirit of these service tiers is you want turnkey simplicity. Yeah. And we were talking to more and more developers that just fundamentally didn't have deep benches of DBAs to help them with data. So their notion of a 4.9 SLA is just turn it on.
Yeah.
Their notion of GODR is just turn it on. It's not sit down and design it for hours and hours and hours. They just need it. But I distinctly remember performance as a topic as one of the things that still had too much complexity. In other words, we'd sit down with folks and they'd start talking about CPU and memory and IOPS. And frankly speaking, you could sort of turn that discussion into anything you wanted.
Yep.
It was too difficult. And then I will never forget the time we sat down and we're like, gosh, you know, what does a database fundamentally need? And it's throughput. You know, and that throughput and performance, if we could keep that super simple, not have people have to even think about the underlying infrastructure, but guarantee you some sort of throughput rate, maybe that's a way to sort of elevate this discussion to the next level. And that's where this concept of a DTU came about. And I when we first started to chat about it, I think people were anxious. But as folks start to understand it, you know, it's yet some more simplicity inside of the system.
Yeah, I think very, very much needed, because we go out and talk to people. They understand, you know, they understand memory and CPU and things like that, right? DTU's, I get it, right?
Well, yeah, you know, speaking of which, this is something you guys might add some color on, is that when we first started to do HA, the discussion, remember the journey that everybody's been on, the folks watching here, us together, the whole industry. You know, you spend 10, 15, 20 years talking about spindles on disks and the exact processor and, you know, so much about a machine and how it's configured. Why? Because that's how people got the most out of their environments in the past. But the cloud is basically saying, hey, a lot of these details are for us to deal with, not you as a developer. But I remember with HA, it was when we started to talk about the number of replicas, a lot of folks would ask questions like, well, how many replicas and where are those replicas and where are they on the disk? Remember that time? And then eventually the SLA is met, and then people start to trust the system. And when we went from 3 to 3.5 to 4.9, that people trust that it's there, and nobody's really asking those same kind of questions because they believe it.
Yeah.
And we think the same will hold true with the DTUs, is people are asking a lot of what is the memory, what is the CPU, but once they understand the throughput, we think that's going to stick.
Yeah, I think there's a learning, a small learning curve where they start, you know, and then that the faith in that, yep, we went from 3.9s to 3.5 to 4.9s.
Yeah.
And as you know, internal folks start believing, you know, that kind of rubs off onto those that are watching, like, okay, I get it, right? There's that trust.
Do you want to give some insight into the governance stuff that we built?
Yeah, this is interesting. So I alluded earlier that we sort of, the genesis of SQL Azure was this earlier cloud storage system that we built, CloudDB, and it was all built around autonomous management at scale using a core SQL Server engine and so on. But the journey to multi-tenancy, when you throw many, many different users and applications in there, everybody's going to try and, you know, in general, burst or try and push their workload to the maximum throughput they can get.
Yep.
And it can be a little bit chaotic. Right? If there's no sheriff in town governing and there's no laws,
push
and
the
so
limits
on,
and see what I can.
People don't know, they'll just push, right? So one of the things that we focused on pretty much last calendar year was putting comprehensive resource governance in place.
Right? Yeah.
So prior to the service tiers launching, we really only had effectively two offers in the market. We had what we called our web and business editions, and then we had a preview edition of premium.
Right.
And premium had guaranteed resourcing, guaranteed throughput behind it, which was the earlier or first incarnation of this DTU concept.
Yep.
And you know, frankly, we had a lot of complaints from customers around this thing called throttling. Right. Well, what is throttling?
Yeah.
Throttling is when you're pushing too hard and the node that your database happens to be pinned to, along with other tenants, is actually at risk of falling over because there's too much load being put on it. The system would react and it would say, right, well, let's cut everybody off, even the people that weren't pushing things too hard, and then people will reconnect later and it'll put a little bit of back pressure in the system. Now, a mechanism like that's perfectly fine if the system's dedicated to you and your application, because you can teach your app to back off.
Key being dedicated to you, right?
But in this system, it's not dedicated to you, right? It's shared, right? So we spent a lot of time looking at things like I/O governance, log governance, CPU governance, and so on. And you now see those realized in the service tiers, right? As you go up the various service tiers, you get more DTU throughput.
Yep.
DTU is a proxy for how much I/O, CPU, and memory that you get. And that's now backed by comprehensive policy mechanisms that actually enforce that.
So no more throttling, no more cutting you off, more just scaling you back a little bit.
And in fact, right now, we're this close from actually disabling throttling forever and never bringing it back, because our confidence that the governance is actually working very, very well.
There's a collective cheer out in the masses when you just said that, by the way.
We're happy too, because frankly, it's a very, very poor experience for customers. It's like, what, you just cut me off? I wasn't my fault.
Yeah, but I didn't do anything. Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, I remember the time, like, even our rhythms changed. Like, you know, there's no joke, I think, when Nigel's talking about looking at these scorecards, we every single day, we understand fully what's happening in the service. And I remember the team. I mean, this is all kidding aside, I mean, the team, no engineer is sort of just coming in looking to build software and be done with it. The customer empathy in this team is, in the 15, 16 years I've been in this, I've never seen it this high.
Yeah.
Why? Because I remember we'd sit in the room and we'd look at charts, and when people were getting governed last year, like, nobody felt good about it. But it motivated this huge, huge effort for governance altogether, which is so key behind these service tiers. So it's... You know, and then, you know, once you build that, then you have that in place, it just allows us to move to these next levels in the system.
Yep.
But I have to say, that was probably those were a long set of months where we were just trying to really get in to understand these details.
Learning curve, but at the same time, I think, you know, this is where the trust of the public, you know, those using this service go, they get it, you know, we get it. And you know, the trust level just goes
higher. It's interesting because even this notion of simplicity that Sean spoke about, right, that was very critical, because there are a lot of decisions that get made at different levels in the group, which is, and I think one of the things that we've seen that has changed over the last 18 months is, you know, the governance and service tiers come online is, hey, as a developer, the only thing I care about is throughput and latency. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how do you make, you know, like, so how do you make that developer's life that simple, right?
Yeah.
In every decision you make. So if it's HA or GDPR or any sort of feature that you're adding, I shouldn't be thinking about knobs. I should just be thinking in these
turn it on and go.
Turn it on and go. Yep. And every decision that we make, every technical decision that we make in terms of design, like how is it going to impact that experience? Yep. I think that's one of the things as a part of this whole daily operational scorecard things that's sort of seeking very well in the group. So, you know, that actually was a great
This has
thing.
Been an interesting one too, because I mean, for folks that have been using RGDB for a while, many of them, I mean, as an example, they want the whoops recovery scenario, right?
Yep.
I fat-fingered myself.
Did a delete without a where clause. Yeah.
So we never had a good solution for that, at least externally facing. We did have the ability if customer called, we actually maintain comprehensive backups in the system. But there's no self-service capability there. So people were using this service called backup import-export, which is really intended from day one about how do people get data into the system and how do they get it out through using logical formats. But over time, based on lack of capability, people have built comprehensive DR strategies with that, right? So we have some customers that have been literally importing and exporting tens of thousands of databases a day, right? Now with the service tiers, we have self-service restore capabilities.
Point-in-time restore,
Yeah, we have essentially based on which tier you're at, we have the ability to have a geo-redundant copy.
Mm-hmm.
We have active and passive DR and so on. So we've taken, in some sense, another design of the tiers. There's obviously this performance dimension. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that's there between basic, standard, and premium are richer capabilities based on different use cases and scenarios. And we see customers actually using a mixture of these different tiers, right? Your most, you know, for example, many apps have a notion of, say, a login database, a central catalog of user accounts and so on, right? If that thing's offline, the whole app's offline. That's a great candidate for, say, a premium database, right? Maximum throughput, super high available, active GODR and so on. But individual tenant data and so on, that could be spread across, you know, many, many standard databases or in some cases even basic databases.
Right.
So we're pretty bullish on, in some sense, the tiers themselves, but also the process about how we figured out what the right set of capabilities are by really engaging with the community.
You're not going to see a mom and pop shop type of use a premium, and, you know, unless there's the, you know, the warrant for it.
Like yeah, scenario, exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Good. So what can we see, what's in the future? I mean, is there any other topics, or can we go there now? Is there, what can we see down the road, or?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I guess the, to be mindful of what we have planned, the future's bright. And I have to tell you, I'd love to go into specifics on this, but I think I can speak on behalf of three of us in our
team.
Not
to put you all on the spot.
We love what we're doing.
Yeah.
And there is no better feeling than once you get a nice foundation in place and you have this operational rhythm and you have, you're able to deploy software on a daily basis and you can connect with customers in a way that you never could before. You can iterate on ideas very fast and to the taste test, as Nigel put it.
Yep.
It just allows you to get a lot done in a short amount of time. And what we're finding is that, you know, people are coming in more excited than they've ever been.
Yep.
And, you know, the reason is because we'll talk to customers, they'll give us some feedback, we're able to test it out, see what doesn't work, and deliver on it. And, you know, so I think the foundation we have is around that operational hardening. The business model is definitely in a better place. I think these service tiers are designed in a way that we can add to them pretty easily, like the S0 is a brand new tier that, or, you know, that we just added into the system. And with auditing that you see there, everybody can expect more to come around security. We take that pretty darn seriously. We have some great talent behind that. You know, the hourly billing is a good thing for a lot of reasons. We're really excited about Malmo, which is we've heard from ISVs and CSVs around the world, like, hey, we need a way to sort of maybe a really easy way to think about it is apply a budget to a set of resources and not go over that budget and have my app perform all the time. So it's, try it simply said, but there's a lot of work behind that. So we're pretty excited for that to come this year. And as well as these experiences, I think the team is pouring as much work as they can, trying to make it as simple as possible for people to use any feature in the system. And then I would expect all that automation that we referred to earlier, where we benefit internally, you certainly want to extend that as much as you can out to our users.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Gentlemen, any parting comments? Did we touch on everything?
I think we definitely believe that the industry, database industry, is going through a significant change.
Yeah. And,
you know, just based on our experience over the last 2 years, it's very interesting. Even when we think about the next box version of SQL Server, we think cloud first. Like, how do we get feedback? The way we used to do whole customer experience, TAP programs, and things like that to engage is significantly changing. We're thinking SQL DB, SQL Azure. That's where we basically put our bits out. Even some of the bits for the next release of SQL sort of are already as we speak are going out. So that's super, super exciting. It's very game changing.
Yeah. The last thing I'd add is that the three of us own relational database full stop.
Yeah.
Right. So we're responsible for our regular SQL Server ecosystem that people know and love. We're responsible for running SQL Server in virtual machines in Azure, and we're responsible for Azure DB. And we find that our customers are actually using a mixture of all three of those. And what's critically important for us is these things aren't islands, that we can connect these things together. So there's a bunch of really interesting scenarios and use cases that we're looking at. And
hybrid's always an interesting one, because we like you said, SQL Server is always, people have invested in SQL Server.
Yep.
We're not asking them to get rid of it,
but
how can we leverage SQL Server in an Azure VM? How can we leverage SQL Database in a hybrid scenario just, because they have this vested interest.
Yeah.
Hybrid's going to be a very interesting scenario.
And we know, for example, right now, we've got a great set of capabilities running in virtual machines in Azure.
Yep.
We have some limitations in Azure DB that are preventing people from buying into the whole value they get from autonomy and so on. And we're working really, really hard to remove those barriers.
Yeah.
So that we can get to a point where people can literally say, I need IaaS for the right reasons, as in, highest degree of app compat, I'm literally lifting and shifting my app, versus I'm using Azure DB for everything else.
Yep.
Right? There'd be no reason why you couldn't use Azure DB. And I think we're working really hard towards that day. And that's, I think, when we truly realize the value of choice in the cloud.
Yeah.
Whereas right now, there's a few little niggly bits and pieces and so on that we have to sort of break down and so on. And we're really close to doing that.
But the progress that they're making over that is getting much, just because of the operational changes, and help us get there much faster.
Yeah, our pace, the pace that we're delivering stuff is accelerating.
Yeah.
It's really exciting.
Well, even with, for those of you that are using SQL Server, SQL Virtual Machines, or SQL Database, to the point about the operational readiness, the one mainline, the pace of, we're going through the next major release of SQL right now, and the pace of innovation that's happening there is it's good, and we're testing ideas and validating ideas. But to Nigel's point, the scenarios that we can design across this data continuum are very real and very differentiating. And at least when we sit down with customers, big enterprises that have huge footprints, tens of thousands of databases and instances on premise, they have different set of assets up in the cloud. They really appreciate the fact that they have these different choices, and we work each and every day trying to connect these as much as we possibly can. We have some early scenarios out, like enrolling Azure VMs on premise and back up to the cloud. But I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have some
just getting started.
I wish we could talk about a few things right now, but we can't. But it's pretty exciting.
We'll save that for another time. Get some more stuff to announce later, hopefully. So I think, like you say, Sean, I think the next, the future's bright. I think this is getting more and more exciting every day.
Right.
And I think, our listening audience, watching audience can just, bated breath type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. We just can't wait to see what's coming next. But I think it's, exciting to see what's coming from just, SQL Server as a service, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Gentlemen, appreciate your time. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. We'll see you next time.